Today's episode is sponsored by Freetrade, the commission-free investment platform that is revolutionising the world of investing in the UK market. Welcome to Many Happy Returns, where we aim to make you a better investor. I'm Roman.
And I'm Michael.
With just 1 month until the end of the UK tax year, it's time to review our family finances. Don't miss out on use it or lose it allowances or the opportunity to optimise your investments.
I want to know how to make the most of our money without angering the tax man. And in today's dumb question of the week, what is bed and breakfasting? All right, let's get into it. So we've said it's a month until the new tax year, but then I don't know when you're listening to this. So to be clear, the new tax year starts on the 6th of April, which means you have until the 5th of April to do any changes you want to the current tax year. Why is it ending on the 5th of April? Is there any reason for this random date?
Is it a great British tradition, Michael?
It's a tradition. I wouldn't say it's great. I think almost every other country has it, you know, at a sensible time, like 1st of January.
It's actually because of a mismatch between the Gregorian calendar, which got out of date with the seasons of the year because it had not enough days in the year, and the British calendar. So we ended up 11 days out of sync with the rest of Europe, and that was in 1752.
Yeah, I saw the Treasury kept moving it around as well because they wanted to maximise revenue in the tax year, so varying the number of days. Like, fair enough, Treasury, but I don't think you're going to take this calendar excuse if I file my tax return late. I was following the Julian calendar, HMRC. All right, so I think we've come up with 9 things you may want to consider before the end of the tax year. Now, at the start here, we should say none of this is tax advice or investment advice or any kind of advice. Listen to what we say, but do what you want.
And the first one, I think, is an absolute no-brainer, and this is about your ISA. Now, the individual savings account has this yearly limit, and that applies over the tax year. So when the tax year ends, if you haven't used it, you're going to lose it.
And to be clear, for the current tax year, that's £20,000.
And as of next tax year, this is April the 6th, 2024, there are some new rules which apply as to how you can put money into your ISA and how it can be split amongst multiple providers. But for this tax year, which is the April 2023 to 2024 tax year, you can put your money only into one of each type of ISA. So one stocks and shares ISA can have new money in it. One cash ISA can have new money in it, but that's going to change next year.
One innovative finance ISA. Does anyone use those things?
Lifetime ISA. You could still put money into those, Michael.
Yes, I could do if I was wanting to buy a house or inefficiently save for retirement.
What's inefficient about it? An ISA is an ISA.
Well, if you're a higher rate taxpayer, your pension is far more efficient from a tax point of view.
True, true, true.
But yeah, if you have the disposable income to fill up your ISA, I don't see why you wouldn't do it if you're living in the UK. Because those tax advantages are huge. You don't pay capital gains tax or income tax on anything that you put into a stocks and shares ISA. That's a big, big advantage.
And I speak to people sometimes who say, surely if the capital goes up in value over time, then I could end up with a very large pot. Surely that can't all be exempt from capital gains tax and income tax. Well, yes, it is. It's an incredible gift. And with these gifts, you have to use them if you can.
It's almost too powerful, the ISA, let's whisper it. But compared to other countries, it's a massive tax break we get here on capital.
Of course, it's capped as to how much you can put in, but there's no maximum cap as to how much it can be worth. So if you have the right investments inside it, then you could be in pretty good shape if you max it out for many years. For example, I've done calculations which show that in 26 years, you could reach $1 million in your pot. So not a huge period of time, but you could easily reach that over the course of your investment career if you start early.
And that's presumably just using your bog standard index funds.
Yeah, that's not assuming you've got incredibly high returns. That's 5% real return, which you could probably achieve with a global index fund, global stock index fund.
So obviously ISAs. You got your annual allowance, use it or lose it. Now, with pensions and SIPs, which are a kind of pension, there's also annual allowances, but it's a little bit more complicated.
That's right. So the allowances are much more complex. It really depends on how much you earn, but also you can carry forward allowances, unused allowances from previous tax years. So a lot more complex to work out and a lot more scope for getting things wrong, I think.
So the current annual allowance is a maximum of £60,000. And I say a maximum because it's capped at your annual earnings. If you only earn £50,000, then £50,000 is your maximum you can put into a pension tax-free. And it also gets complicated because if you're a really high earner, if you earn over £200,000, then your annual allowance starts to be reduced, tapered, as they call it. So this is where it's really worth looking into the rules before you start throwing loads of money into a pension. Just check you're not going to be penalised for putting too much in.
Now, there are some caveats with that. You can carry forward your unused allowances from 3 years previously, but you have to have been a member of a registered pension scheme in the UK during that relevant period.
And to use those carry forward allowances, you have to have enough earnings in the current tax year.
And the way it works is you work forward from the earliest year first. And if you're subject to that tapered annual allowance, you need to measure any unused annual allowance against the tapered allowance for each given year. So if that's not making you go cross-eyed, I don't know what will.
Yeah, I mean, basically the situation where you really want to look into this carry forward idea is if you were maybe earning less money in previous years, or at least weren't able to put so much into a pension. And now you've become a high earner with a lot of money and you're like, well, how should I best invest it? Well, that's maybe when you should start looking at, well, are these carry forward allowances helpful to me? And the other reason you might look into contributing to a pension is not just because, you know, you're going to fund your retirement, but it's also the fact that it reduces your taxable income now, which might dip you below certain thresholds, which stop the government from taking away certain benefits from you. So an obvious example is child benefit, which you receive for each of your children. Unless either of the parents earn above £50,000 per year, at that point it starts getting tapered. And by the time you earn £60,000, you don't get any child benefit. So for example, if you earn £55,000, if that's your salary, it might well make sense to sacrifice enough to get below that limit and keep your child benefit payments.
The other one which is useful, I guess, is your personal income tax allowance, and that gets tapered above 100k per year income. So if you want to reduce that income, again, if you're close to that 100k threshold, then paying money into your pension is one way to reduce that income.
That's one of the most ridiculous things about the UK tax system. You can probably tell by the annoyance in my voice. The marginal tax rate between £100,000 and I think it's £125,000 is over 60% because of this tapering of your personal allowance. People think the top rate of income tax in the UK is 45%. It's not. It's over 60% because you've got national insurance on top of that as well. So that's 62%. Then you potentially got student loans. Like, some people can be paying crazy, like 70% plus marginal tax rates on that money they earn over £100,000. And it gets worse if you've got children, because there's tax-free childcare where the government pays for 30 hours per week of childcare. So you could put your child into a nursery. But that gets taken away if you earn more than £100,000. And in fact, if you do the sums, you can have a marginal tax rate of over 100%. So basically, if you earned £101,000, you'd be worse off than if you earned £100,000, like significantly worse off. If you've got 2, 3 or 4 year old children, for example.
In the coaching sessions, I speak to a lot of doctors and they're just exasperated by this, because clearly these are people who want to help other people. That's why they work in the NHS. That's why they became doctors in the first place. But they're in this situation where if they earn more, they work harder, then they earn less because it's crazy marginal tax rate. So hopefully this will be taken away in future tax years. And we should say, all of this stuff is subject to change. Every government comes in and tweaks it, changes it. And so it's probably worth checking with HMRC to see what the tax rates are right now and whether the rules have changed.
It's just a terribly designed system around these thresholds. No tax system should have these hard thresholds because it makes people do crazy things like work less hours or be forced to sacrifice huge amounts into their pension. Like if you earned £130,000 and you've got toddlers, and you obviously don't want to be worse off than if you're earning £100,000. You're going to be sacrificing loads into your pension for a few years, probably.
Now, what you can't see right now is the spittle, which is dribbling down Michael's chin. So we'll just give him a chance to wipe that off.
I'm calming down. Right, number three is maybe consider paying into your spouse's pension.
Now, I speak to a lot of people, again, coaching sessions, where there's a huge difference between the amount which is saved by one partner relative to the other. And if that's the case, then it's not very tax efficient when it comes to drawdown time, when you're actually going to sell some of the assets in your pension in order to live, because you're not going to be fully using your tax allowances if it's just one person paying out. So by having a more equal split between yourself and your partner, then that can be much more tax efficient in retirement.
Yeah, so if there's one person earning and one person not earning, the breadwinner could pay up to £2,880 into the pension of the person who's not working, and the government will gross that up to £3,600. So it's not a huge amount, but I guess it's ultimately free money.
So it certainly makes sense, I think, just to level up in that way. Also, maybe you just feel it's more equitable to do it that way.
But you're right, because we're taxed as individuals, even within a marriage, when you've got this massive difference in wealth between the two spouses, it is very inefficient, like you say, when you're drawing down on your pension pot. And I even read an article a few years ago about a sham divorce. You heard about this? Now, of all the things in this episode, this is the least tax advice-y of any of it. I mean, none of it is, but especially not this, where you've heard of a sham marriage, right? Where people get married for immigration reasons or whatever it might be. A sham divorce in this case seemed to be some guy who was thinking of divorcing his wife, even though they were planning to stay together as a couple, because then he could get a pension sharing order at the court, which would allow him to split his massive pension pot and give half to his wife tax-free, so she could draw down on that half and he could draw down on his half and save huge amounts in tax. And I remember there was a response on the article from some sort of tax lawyer who said, "Do not do this. This is fraud."
Oh, that's so romantic. Honey, let's get a divorce.
But when you have a tax system set up in kind of crazy ways, people will come to these kind of crazy conclusions.
Yeah, it does seem very odd.
But anyway, if you can find a way to equalize the wealth between yourselves and a couple, it's probably to your benefit later on.
And while we're on the subject of greater equality in savings, you could always do it via your ISA as well. So if you have a choice about whose ISA to top up to 20K, if you're not going to be maxing out both, do it for your partner if they're going to have less savings than you.
It's a nice thing to do, though there's no tax advantage to it because it's tax-free whoever's ISA it's in.
Because when you draw money out of the ISA, you're never going to pay tax on that again, whether it's your account or your partner's.
But talking about whose ISA to pay into, another thing you could consider is to help out your kids or grandkids.
Or random kids, for that matter.
I won't be helping out random kids. But there is a £9,000 allowance for a junior ISA. And, you know, if you've contributed your max to your pension and your ISA, maybe this is something to start looking at.
And, of course, they get control of it when they're 18. Now, if you trust your children, absolutely fine. I have spoken to some people who said, "I don't trust my children, so I'm not going to put it into a junior ISA."
Keep it in my ISA, and if they're good, they get it.
That's the way they did it. They said, "I'll put it into my partner's account, and, you know, when they reach 18, we'll decide whether they're going to get the money."
Yeah. I mean, I think junior ISAs make sense, but probably only when you get to the stage that you've maxed out your own. Because a junior ISA is locked up to their 18, you're locking the money away. So you'd rather have a more liquid investment, so keep it in your own ISA, I would have thought. The other option, of course, is a junior SIP, whereas if you really don't trust your child, you can lock the money up till they're 57 in a pension.
Or whatever it is by that time. Maybe there won't be such a thing as pensions then. But I wouldn't dismiss a junior SIP out of hand, simply because the effects of compounding over these crazy long periods is just staggering. So if you use up your allowance for your junior SIP, you put in £2,880 a year, that gets grossed up to £3,600 because they assume that they're a basic rate taxpayer. And if you do that for a 15-year period, so let's say you start off when they're born and then you stop when they're 15, it's not a huge amount you're putting in, but if you leave that for 50 years and it grows at the average rate for a global index fund for stocks, that'll reach over £1 million in real terms. So that's why, although you won't get to see the benefit, it's going to be a great thing for your kids. They'll look back to you and think, oh, mum and dad, they were great.
They wouldn't buy me any toys or sweets, but they did fill up my junior sip. I'm grateful as a pensioner.
After I've received therapy.
But it's the beauty of compounding, isn't it? You do forget how powerful it is. If you start when you're 0 years old, by the time you're 60, it's going to be a huge amount. The rule of thumb I work with an index fund is that roughly speaking, in real terms, you can expect the value to double every 10 years, very roughly. So if you're doing six doublings before you draw on the money, yeah, you can have a nice retirement.
Today's episode is sponsored by Freetrade, the commission-free investment platform that is revolutionising the world of investing in the UK market. Freetrade offers you over 6,100 US, UK and European stocks, ETFs and investment trusts. With over 1.5 million users on board and having won the best online trading platform at the British Bank Awards 5 years in a row, they're a well-trusted trading platform. With Freetrade, investors have the opportunity to manage their investments in a tax-efficient way by opening a stocks and shares ISA. For those looking to consolidate their retirement savings, Freetrade offers a self-invested personal pension, or SIP, so you can bring all your old pensions under one roof. And speaking of ISA and SIP, Freetrade has a limited-time offer giving away a free share worth between £100 and £2,100 when you open and top up, or transfer an ISA or SIP with at least £10,000 before 5th of April 2024. Curious how it works? Here's what you need to do. Download the Freetrade app, open either an ISA or SIP account with an annual standard or plus subscription on or before 5th of April 2024, top up your account or start a transfer for at least £10,000, keep your account open with a balance of £10,000 or more, and will drop the free share into your account within 90 days of campaign completion. Head over to freetrade.io/transfer to learn more and get started. Remember, this offer closes on the 5th of April 2024. Capital at risk, ISA and SIP eligibility, tax rules and terms and conditions apply. Free share value varies depending on the amount topped up or transferred. Annual subscription required. Other charges may apply.
So we've talked about ISAs, we've talked about pensions. In the UK, those are the two main investing vehicles you can use to grow your wealth. But once you go beyond that and you're investing outside of an ISA or a pension, then our point number five is consider your capital gains tax allowances, because again, they are use it or lose it each year.
Now, it has fallen a lot, and that's going to be a problem. But as of 6th of April 2024, it's going to fall from 6,000 a year to 3,000 a year.
Yeah, it was 12,000. The current tax year is 6,000. Next tax year is 3,000. If you're smart about how you sell your taxable investments, you can kind of use this allowance each year to disperse your gains and minimize your tax bill.
And I've spoken to people who do this. They're very careful in terms of their sales of their investments, which are held outside an ISA or a SIP.
You have to be, unless you want to just be giving more to the tax man than you need to.
Or they need the money. That's the other potential reason why they might do that and take the tax hit. Now, there is another way to do this, which is you could gift the assets to your partner, and that way you can use their allowance as well.
Yeah, you say partner, make sure you're married, because if you're not married or in a civil partnership, then that's a taxable event, transferring assets. But within a marriage, you can transfer an asset to your spouse or half of an asset to your spouse and then effectively double the capital gains allowance you can use. And the other side of this coin is that not all of our investments are going to deliver gains. Sadly, some will deliver losses. That's the nature of the world. So point number six is you can consider tax loss harvesting.
Now, this is something in the US which is used very widely, but in the UK, strangely, I don't see people talking about it. Why do you think that is?
Because we're a much poorer country with not many taxable gains and losses. And we've got big ISAs.
That's true. We do get the tax break, so you don't really have to worry about it as much. But the idea here is that if you've got losses, you can write them off against your gains when it comes to calculating capital gains tax.
Yeah. So if you were going to sell an asset which was generating a taxable gain of £50,000 in a year, and you also have an asset which has generated a £50,000 loss since you bought it, well, might make sense to sell that one at the same time, because then you're not going to be paying capital gains tax because they'll offset each other.
Now, there are certain things which you have to do here. If you've made a loss on an asset which you've sold, the point at which capital gains tax gets paid is at the point at which you dispose of the asset when the sale occurs. So make sure that you tell HMRC about the loss as you make it in that tax year, because you've only got 4 years to declare it. Otherwise, you're going to lose the ability to carry it forward.
Yeah, you can carry the loss forward and then use it to offset future gains, so long as you declare it in time.
Exactly. And then once you've declared it, you can carry it forward forever. So literally, you can use this write-off of taxes forever in the future, but you have to have announced it. Now, you can probably tell it's pretty complicated, the tax loss harvesting rules in the UK, but there is a tax calculator produced by HMRC, which will allow you to work out your capital gains tax allowance. So use it, because it is incredibly good, I think, you know, for a government-produced calculator.
So we've talked about ISA allowances, pension allowances, junior ISA allowances, junior pension allowances, capital gains tax allowances. Are there any more allowances we need to be aware of here?
Yes, we've got inheritance tax allowance. And there are lots of rules about this. It is incredibly complex, but maybe we can just give the broad outlines.
Yeah, so as I understand it, and that's my get out of jail free sentence there, you can give away £3,000 a year without risking an inheritance tax liability. And you can carry that forward up to 1 year. You can also give away gifts of up to £250 per person, as long as they're not the same person who's using another of your allowances. You can give £5,000 to your children when they get married. You can give £2,500 to your grandchildren when they get married. And you can give £1,000 to anyone else who's getting married. Anything you gift above these allowances, so if you gift above the £3,000 allowance in a tax year, then that's called a potentially exempt transfer, which means there's no tax due right now, probably. But if you die within 7 years, then that gift may be subject to inheritance tax, depending on the value of your estate.
So this is a little bit of a weird thing where you have to work out when you're going to die and say, well, I feel pretty healthy and hale at the moment, so maybe I should, you know, start gifting while I still can. But this allowance does taper according to when you die. So if you give the gift and you survive for 3 to 4 years, it tapers to 32% rather than the usual 40%. Then 4 to 5 years, it falls to 24%. And then it goes to zero at 7 or more years. So you've got to kind of think, well, I'm going to last this period of time. And then just live very carefully. Don't do any bungee jumping.
Really, the tax man should start subsidising bungee jumping, shouldn't it? For old people, if it wants to boost the revenues.
Where's a risky place to go on holiday?
So those rates you were talking about is the inheritance tax rates. And it does get so complicated, inheritance tax. And estate planning is a whole minefield in itself. And this is where talking to an accountant is really crucial if you know you're worth a lot of money. Because the other point is, if you make gifts out of normal expenditure, is kind of how it's termed, without impacting your own standard of living, then they're potentially exempt as well. So, you know, if you're giving your kids a regular allowance. And I think the general principle is it's probably more tax efficient to slowly give your money away to your heirs across your life rather than waiting until you die.
And the other benefit of that, of course, is that let's say they're 25 and they're starting their new home and they need a lot of capital. That's probably a better time to give them the money than when they've already established themselves in their own career and they're pretty comfortable. So I think that's not necessarily a bad thing.
And crucial here as well is record keeping. There's a lot of allowances and there's a lot of gifts you're thinking about making potentially.
So make sure you keep the receipts and also record the transactions. You don't want to leave a mess when you pass away. Another one, which is really important, I think, is if you're going to bequeath some of your stocks to your heirs, the important point from capital gains tax perspective is that the starting price at which they're going to calculate capital gains tax will be the price as of the time of your death. So let's say you've bought some stocks which have gone up hugely in value. You're going to be liable for a huge capital gains tax payment if you sell them. Whereas if you bequeath those to your kids, say, it'll reset according to the price on your death date. So that could be a good way to avoid capital gains tax yourself and allow your children to benefit from the ownership of the stock. And in fact, the best day to die is when markets are closed, because there's actually a little bit of leeway here. You can work out the best price according to the last day when the stock exchange was open before you died, or the first day that the stock exchange was open after you died. And you can actually use whichever was lower.
This has all got a bit morbid, hasn't it? Let's liven it up. Number 8, something uplifting. Get an accountant. We all love accountants.
I always say this to people because the rules around tax are so complex that having that professional help really is useful. And of course, they charge in a much more reasonable way than a percentage of your assets. They charge a fixed fee based on the services they provide. So even if you're very wealthy, they're not going to take away some proportion of your wealth in order to provide that service.
Yeah, in fact, if they're good and you're wealthy enough, they should more than earn their own fee in the tax they save you.
That's usually the case when I get my tax return done. Although I usually do end up with a tax bill because I'm self-employed, but I always think, yeah, they're doing a great job.
You hate taxes, though, Robin. You don't even want to think about them. You're not a tax guy.
I'm not a tax guy. You know, I'm not a specialist, certainly. And if people ever ask me about it, I always start off by saying, I'm not a tax guy.
I mean, you might think everything we've talked about sounds so incredibly complicated, and it is. But it can be so much more complicated as well because, you know, you might have divorces in the mix. You might have multiple jurisdictions if you're moving from one country to another, or your partner's from another country. Maybe they're a non-dom. Like, it can get so complicated, especially as the fact that tax years don't align across the world.
The one I've really been shocked by, and I speak to lots of people, obviously, but the one that really shocks me is that if you're born in the United States, from a tax perspective, you will always be American. You can't get away from that. And it's pretty shocking. You know, even if you move away at the age of one to live somewhere else, you'll still be liable for US tax.
Yeah, you're right. If you're a citizen of the US, you have to file US taxes wherever you live in the world. And the US reserves the right to tax you on your global income and gains. And in fact, the US is one of only two countries in the world that taxes based on citizenship rather than residency. That just makes me want to think, what's the other place? Let me try and find it.
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me.
I think it's somewhere really small, like Eritrea or something. Let me look it up.
And that's why people listen to this podcast.
It is Eritrea. How did I remember that? I'm not a citizen of Eritrea, thank goodness. How the hell did I remember that?
That is amazing.
I definitely don't envy people who are from the US. Actually, I do. I'd love to be a US citizen, but not for this reason. It's tough. Like, I know that it's even hard to open a brokerage account in the UK if you're a US citizen. A lot of them will just say, we don't deal with US citizens.
It's just too complex.
It's too complicated and we don't want to risk the long arm of the law from the US.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've covered 8 points. Let's go to the 9th and final thing to think about before the end of the tax year.
I like this one, and that's giving money to a charity. So this is to do with gift aid, and it allows charities to claim tax relief on the donations you're going to make to them.
Yeah, okay, that's really generous of us. But is there also a nice tax advantage for the gifter?
Well, giving money away, and this is true in the US as well, I believe, reduces your taxable income. So if you are going to be close to a threshold, then maybe you could do this in a strategic way and work out how much you need to give in order to push yourself down a threshold.
Yeah, if it's to a registered charity. And it gets better if you're a higher rate taxpayer. If you're a basic rate taxpayer, you pay tax at 20% and the charity claims that back from HMRC. And it does that as well if you're a higher rate taxpayer. But if you're paying tax at the 40% rate or the 45% rate, then you can claim back that extra tax, the difference, so the extra 20% or 25% on your tax return. So effectively, you can give £100 to charity at a cost to you of between £60 and £80, I guess, depending on your tax rate.
So I've noticed that when I give money to the RHS, I'm a member of the Royal Horticultural Society, love going to Wisley, they can claim back 20% of the amount I give them.
Yeah, that's how gift aid works. And that's a nice part of the tax system. We've spent a lot of time slagging it off, but I think gift aid is a good thing.
But wait a minute, Michael. There's a 10th item here I can see on the list.
But this episode was called 9 Things to Think About. What else do you want us to do before the end of the tax year?
Well, of course, you should sign up for a PensionCraft membership. And that means I don't have to record a promotional section, doesn't it?
And it means I don't have to sit here listening to you re-record it about 10 times. I've noticed people are joining up more, though. It seems to be a lot of people joining at the moment.
Yeah, we're doing very well. We've got a big community and it's quite lively. So, yeah, do think about it. And if you do want to do it, pensioncraft.com is a place to go.
Okay, today's dumb question of the week is, what is bed and breakfasting and why does the tax man stop us doing it?
So the way this used to work, let's say that you've got a £6,000 capital gains tax exempt amount and that's still available to use and you've got a gain of £6,000 or less on a stock. What you could do is just before the tax year ends, you could sell it, realise the gain, and then buy it back just as the new tax year starts and reset the base price against which you're going to measure your capital gains in future.
Yeah, so the idea would be you bank the gain tax-free because it's within your allowance, but you still want to own that asset, so you buy it back really quickly. But the law changed at some point, so that's no longer allowed.
And the rules at the moment mean that if you are going to buy it back, you can't do that within 30 days of the time at which you sold it.
Well, you can buy it back straight away, but it basically means you no longer crystallise the gain and the whole scheme to avoid the tax doesn't work. But obviously, people still want to do this. They still want to essentially find a way of using their capital gains tax allowance by selling an asset with a gain while still owning that asset and not being out of the market. So there are various ways that people have found to do this. And the obvious one is to use your SIP or your ISA.
So these are called BED and ISA or BED and SIP transactions. And your platform will give you specific instructions as to how to do this. You sell the asset and you immediately move it into your ISA or your SIP. That doesn't mean it's a no-cost transaction because you might still have to pay things like stamp duty if you're buying a UK-listed stock. There'll still be trading fees, but what will happen is it won't be subject to capital gains tax or income tax if it's inside the ISA or SIP.
And the other scheme people sometimes use is called bed and spouse, which sounds a lot more frisky than a bed and ISA. But it's basically making use of that idea we talked about earlier that you can gift assets within a marriage without a tax penalty. So, you know, let's say I own a share with a gain of £6,000. I sell it, bank the profits. Now I gift the profits to my wife and she can buy the exact same share in her name with those profits. And it doesn't fall foul of these bed and breakfasting rules because, you know, it's not me buying it now.
Another way to do this is to buy a similar asset. So it's not exactly the same asset, it's just similar. And I always think that's worrying because there could be a legal dispute about what is similar. Now, wealthy people make use of this all the time. And there's a US billionaire, Steve Ballmer, who made his money with Microsoft, who used this, for example. And there's a ProPublica story about this where they say Ballmer, through his investment management accountant at Goldman, had sold shares in the dual-listed natural resources giants Shell and BHP, then replaced them on the same day with identical amounts of the other class of the company's shares and claimed a chunky reduction. And then he did this repeatedly. And they estimate, ProPublica, that between 2014 and 2018, he managed to reduce his tax bill by $138 million. So clearly it worked for him.
Yeah, so we're saying, okay, maybe you can buy a similar asset. Well, in this case, he bought arguably the exact same asset with a slightly different share class, but it worked. So I think the takeaway here is if you're considering something like this, you really need to talk to an accountant first because it's very easy to get it wrong. But theoretically, if you're an index investor, you could dance in and out of different index funds.
Which give you very similar exposure, yeah.
But I guess with the capital gains tax allowance being reduced to £6,000 in the current year and then just £3,000 in the next year, it's not going to make that much difference.
Yeah, I just don't think it's worth it. And some of these things, I just think, well, it does seem a little bit like a loophole. And frankly, I'd rather just pay the tax.
Yeah, some people just really hate paying tax, don't they? They'll save every penny.
I just think in the UK, we've got such generous schemes that you don't really need to use those loopholes. And if you are using the loopholes, then...
Shame. Ring a big bell. Shame. Thank you for joining us for Many Happy Returns. do send us your questions, no matter how dumb, at the email address mhr@pensioncraft.com.
And do remember to check out pensioncraft.com for all the information about our membership and investment coaching options.
Many Happy Returns is a PensionCraft production, co-hosted and executive produced by Romin Nakiza and Michael Pugh. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes and is not financial advice. We do not provide recommendations or endorse any decision to buy, sell, or hold any security. We cannot be held responsible for any actions listeners may take, and investors are encouraged to seek independent financial advice.